到心性本觉这边啊，我们说觉体相者啊，觉体相者有四种大义啊。那说什么叫做觉啊？觉性的体跟相啊，它其实又回归到大圣的大啊，它就是很大，什么东西最大？所有的哎，所有的这个依着我们的心啊，能够产生的作用或不作用，它都是最大哈。所以他说，是这种大，他用两个形容词，一个叫做虚空，一个叫做什么镜子哈，好像镜子一样哈。所以我们会看在佛经里面会常常说，我们的心如明镜啊，心如明镜啊。那哎，这个六祖大师说，心有没有像明镜？没有呢，他说心没有明镜哦，明镜亦非台，有没有？好，所以呢，你说心如果有明镜啊，那这个镜还是一个，我们还是会想象到，好像是就是一个东西哈，有形有相。好，所以呢，六祖大师所讲的明镜亦非台啊，他在讲我们的心的这个镜子，其实有看起来是有镜子，其实它也不是镜子。为什么？因为它是虚空一样，如实空。啊，如是空。好，所以呢，我们会看到呢，用镜子跟用虚空来形容我们的心啊，形容我们的心就有这四种形容哈，这四种形容。第一个叫做如实空，第二个叫因熏习，第三个叫法出离，第四个叫缘熏习。那这四个呢，其实它是在把前面啊，前面从真如门到现在生灭门跟觉性有关系的一个就是阐述哈，全部汇整，跟觉性有关系的所有的阐述全部汇整在这四个镜子。第一个如实空，第二个因熏习，其实他就在讲真如门里面的空跟什么，相对于空跟另外一个叫什么，一个如实空，一个叫如实什么，如实不空。对，所以其实他就是讲一样的东西哈，就是再重复会诊一次。如实空境，他讲远离一切心境界相，无法可现，非觉照义。这个就是在讲心的如实空的部分。所以我们的心在哪里？哎，我们说从小到大，我们装多少的东西，它都装得进去，是不是？不管我们学多少哈。很多人说，哎呦师父，不管你讲了千言万语，我到下礼拜通通没有剩下三言两语了，我不怕感我不怕现哈。为什么？因为这个如实空真的就是全部都装进去，全部都空空掉哈。好，那这个就有一点点不太就是不太妙哈。如果所有的执着跟烦恼都能够因为弃悟空性，一切的业都是空性，我们真正的悟道哈，在礼佛里面讲能理所理这个心哈，能理的心我们很虔诚很恭敬很忏悔也好，所理的佛哈，这个对象哈，不管是能理的心或所理的对象哈，它都是本性空寂。如果我们能够礼佛，能够修忏悔法门，乃至于修诵经也好，打坐也好，修到契入空性，能理所理性空寂，感应道交难思议。所以念佛要念到自性佛，念到实相佛，念到没有能念没有所念啊，这个能念之佛所念之能念的心跟所念的佛归一，能所一如，好像有念等于没有念，那这个如实空，我们就契入的如实空的境界。所以真如门里面呢，如果大家要再看哈，可以看到第三页，要一言真如，一言真如呢啊，下面有两个叫做如实空。如实空什么叫如实空？能够就近显实真正的实相，它什么都不是，什么都没有，好，什么都不执着，什么都没有障碍，叫做就近显实，这叫如实空。好，那虽然它是真正就近显实，但是它不是完空，不是空空洞洞什么都没有，它还有什么要用的时候，它就没有障碍。当我们的心能够真正契入没有过爱没有执着的时候，我们就会有不思议的作用，叫因熏习境。 好，所以第二个就是为什么我们能够有如实不空，因为我们的心的本体它具有无量的功德，无漏的功德。所以呢，这个因熏习气讲一切世间境界悉于中现。好，所以我们会因为任何的因缘的熏习，佛来佛现，魔来魔现。好，所以就好像我们这个镜子，如果擦得很干净，我们看什么境界都现得很清楚。如果心里面有执着有挂碍，我们就会怎样，变成哈哈镜，或者是变成这种有扭曲的，或者是有染污的镜子，我们就会戴上有色的眼镜。好，所以呢，他就说所有的世间的境界它都不离开我们的这个心，所以呢三千大千世界不离开我们当前的这个心，叫做因熏习境。但是他说这下面就讲一切染法所不能染，自体不动，具足无漏，熏众生故。所以呢它是这个境啊，这个不空的这个功德不空的这个如实不空的部分呢，它是可以具足一切的染法不相应它就是不会被所有的无明烦恼执着所障碍所染污它具足无漏性功德，所以这是如实不空。那法出离境跟缘熏习境后面那两个其实它就是刚才我们讲的智定相跟不思议业相。好，所以呢前面两个是真如门的时候空跟不空，后面两个呢就是生灭门里面的觉本觉随染智定相跟不思议业相。所以我们看到法出离这个不空法呢，我们真正能够悟到我们的这个心这个本觉，它可以让我们出离烦恼跟智的爱就是我们的心被我们的习气，被我们的烦恼，被我们比较粗的障碍所障碍所以每天呢都爱生气那这个就是我们的烦恼身心的不调。那或者是每天呢都想不开，这叫挚爱所以我们有习气上的这种烦恼，还有那种对于真理没有真正透彻的看清楚世间事的因缘的智慧的障碍，所以呢这个就是法出离境可以让我们的这两个障碍呢可以得以清净，所以又叫做智净相那缘熏习境这个是当我们在利他的时候呢，我们的这个依法出离故，当我们能够智慧清净，我们就可以骗到众生之心，我们就可以利益众生，化度众生于无形，而且能够令修善根随念示现。好，所以呢他这边括号于彼众生作外缘熏力，所以这样汇整起来呢，其实我们的本觉它具有这四种，一个叫空，一个叫不空，一个叫自性相，一个不自性业相。好，所以呢这样子我们就可以知道这马明菩萨和少论的时候呢前后是相通的是连贯的。好，那到这个地方为止我们都是在讲觉我们在讲觉那么我们了解了觉之后呢，就可以知道我们的心里面其实具足无漏的功德。好，具足无漏的功德。好，所以我们接下来呢要来看既然是无漏的功德，可是为什么我们会被障碍？好，我们为什么被障碍？那这个障碍是怎么开始产生的？好，那我们有没有什么方法是可以解决这个障碍的？好，但是我们要开始讨论这个被障碍的东西我们被自己的不觉障碍之前我们来看一个这个叫做专家也不完全叫做专家就是来。好，专门骗人家的不，这个叫做在推动教育的一个爵士他以前是一个大学教授他们在一个外国的论坛叫 TED 这个 TED 他每年都会举办一些论坛，请各行各业的专家来介绍，用18分钟来介绍他的理念。好，他有宗教家，有小朋友还有这个东方人西方人各式各样的人那这个爵士他提出了一个学习的革命他最近他也写了很多书，他在推动的学习革命，他的主题，这个是8分钟的主题，来大家请麻烦关灯他 他用一个很简短的18分钟 的演讲，他来说一个概念。他说其实我们的教育呢，有时候会把孩子，因为知识化的教育，世界上东西方的学制都是一样哈，所以他会扼杀了我们某一些创意的天分。好，那他当然也点出一些现象哦，那给我们来反省一下，其实的确是这样子哦。我们到底要怎么样去教育下一代，然后是真正的开发他的潜能，而不是扼杀他的潜能。好，同样的，我们如果有这样子的概念去面对我们的修行的时候，我们可能不会扼杀我们可以成佛的潜能，而真正的去开发这一个部分哈。所以呢，我们先看他这一段，他讲话很快，他讲话很快。
How are you? It's been great, hasn't it? I've been blown away by the whole thing. In fact, I'm leaving.
他讲话有点幽默的。
There have been three themes, haven't there, running through the conference?Which are relevant to what I want to talk about. One is the extraordinary evidence of human creativity in all of the presentations that we've had and in all the people here. The variety of it and the range of it. The second is that it's put us in a place where we have no idea what's going to happen in terms of future. No idea how this may play out.I have an interest in education. Actually, what I find is everybody has an interest in education.Don't you? I find this very interesting. If you're at a dinner party and you say you work in education, actually you're not often at dinner parties, frankly. If you work in education, you're not asked. You know, and you're never asked back, curiously. That's interesting. But if you are, and you say to somebody, what do you do? And you say, you work in education. You can see the blood run from their face. Oh my God, you know, my name. My one night out all week. But if you ask people about their education, they pin you to the wall. Because it's one of those things that goes deep with people. Am I right? Like religion and money, and other things. So, I have a big interest in education, and I think we all do. We have a huge vested interest in it, partly because it's education that's meant to take us into this future that we can't grasp. If you think of it, children starting school this year will be retiring in 2065. Nobody has a clue, despite all the expertise that's been on parade for the past 4 days, what the world will look like in 5 years' time. And yet we're meant to be educating them for it.So the unpredictability, I think, is extraordinary. And the third part of this is that we've all agreed, nonetheless, on the really extraordinary capacities that children have, their capacities for innovation. I mean, Serena last night was a marvel, wasn't she? Just seeing what she could do. She's exceptional, but I think she's not, so to speak, exceptional in the whole of childhood. What you have there is a person of extraordinary dedication who found a talent.And my contention is all kids have tremendous talents and we squander them pretty ruthlessly. So I want to talk about education and I want to talk about creativity. My contention is that creativity now is as important in education as literacy and we should treat it with the same status. Thank you. That was it, by the way. Thank you very much. So, 15 minutes left. Well, I was born. No, I had a great story recently. I love telling it. Of a little girl who was in a drawing lesson. She was six, and she was at the back drawing, and the teacher said, this little girl hardly ever paid attention. And in this drawing lesson, she did. And the teacher was fascinated. She went over to her, and she said, what are you drawing? And the girl said, I'm drawing a picture of God.And the teacher said, but nobody knows what God looks like. And the girl said, they will in a minute. When my son was 4 in England, actually he was 4 everywhere to be honest, I mean, for being strict about it, wherever he went he was 4, yeah, but he was in the Nativity play. Do you remember the story? No, it's big. It's a big story. Mel Gibson did the sequel. You may have seen it. I don't know. Nativity 2. But James got the part of Joseph, which we were thrilled about. We consider this to be one of the lead parts. They had the place crammed full of agents and T-shirts. You know, James Robinson is Joseph. He didn't have to speak, but you know the bit where the three kings come in? Now, they come in bearing gifts, and they bring gold, frankincense, and myrrh. This really happened. We were sitting there, and they, I think, just went out of sequence. Because we talked to the little boy afterwards and said, you know, are you okay with that? And they said, yeah, why was that wrong? They just switched, I think that was it. Anyway, the three boys came in, little four-year-olds with tea towels on their heads, and they put these boxes down. The first boy said, I bring you gold. And the second boy said, I bring you myrrh. And the third boy said, Frank sent this. What these things have in common is that kids will take a chance. You know, if they don't know, they'll have a go. Am I right? They're not frightened of being wrong. Now, I don't mean to say that being wrong is the same thing as being creative. What we do know is, if you're not prepared to be wrong, you'll never come up with anything original. If you're not prepared to be wrong. And by the time they get to be adults, most kids have lost that capacity. They have become frightened of being wrong. And we run our companies this, by the way. We stigmatize mistakes. And we're now running national education systems where mistakes are the worst thing you can make. And the result is that we are educating people out of their creative capacities. Picasso once said this. He said that all children are born artists. The problem is to remain an artist as we grow up. I believe this passionately, that we don't grow into creativity, we grow out of it. Or rather, we get educated out of it. So why is this? I lived in Stratford-on-Avon until about 5 years ago. In fact, we moved from Stratford to Los Angeles. So you can imagine what a seamless transition, you know, this was from LA. Actually, we lived in a place called Snitterfield, just outside Stratford, which is where Shakespeare's father was born. Are you struck by a new thought? I was. You don't think of Shakespeare having a father, do you? Do you? Because you don't think of Shakespeare being a child. Do you? Shakespeare being 7. I never thought of it. I mean, he was 7 at some point. He was in somebody's English class, wasn't he? Do you know what I mean? How annoying would that be? Must try harder. Being sent to bed by his dad to Shakespeare. Go to bed now, you know, to William Shakespeare. And put the pencil down. And stop speaking like that. You know, it's confusing everybody. Anyway, we moved from Stratford to Los Angeles. And I just want to say a word about the transition. Actually, my son didn't want to come. I've got 2 kids. He's 21 now and my daughter's 16. He didn't want to come to Los Angeles. He loved it, but he had a girlfriend in England. This was the love of his life, Sarah. He'd known her for a month. Mind you, they'd had their 4th anniversary. Because it's a long time when you're 16. Anyway, he was really upset on the plane. He said, I'll never find another girl like Sarah. And we were rather pleased about that, frankly. Because she was the main reason we were leaving the country. But something strikes you when you move to America and when you travel around the world. Every education system on earth has the same hierarchy of subjects. Everyone, doesn't matter where you go. You think it would be otherwise, but it isn't. At the top are mathematics and languages, then the humanities, and the bottom are the arts, everywhere on earth. And in pretty much every system too, there's a hierarchy within the arts. Art and music are normally given a higher status in schools than drama and dance. There isn't an education system on the planet that teaches dance every day to children the way we teach them mathematics. Why? Why not? I think this is rather important. I think maths is very important, but so is dance. Children dance all the time if they're allowed to, we all do. We all have bodies, don't we? Yeah. Did I miss a meeting? I mean, I think. Truthfully, what happens is, as children grow up, we start to educate them progressively from the waist up. And then we focus on their heads. and slightly to one side. If you were to visit education as an alien and say, what's it for, public education, I think you'd have to conclude, if you look at the output, you know, who really succeeds by this? Who does everything they should? Who gets all the brownie points? You know, who are the winners? I think you'd have to conclude the whole purpose of public education throughout the world is to produce university professors. Isn't it? They're the people who come out the top. Now, I used to be one. So there. You know. But, and I like university professors, but you know, we shouldn't hold them up as the high watermark of all human achievement. They're just a form of life. You know, another form of life. But they're rather curious, and I say this out of affection for them. There's something curious about professors. In my experience, not all of them, but typically, they live in their heads. They live up there, and slightly to one side. They're disembodied, you know, in a kind of literal way. You know, they look upon their body as a form of transport for their heads. You know, it's... Don't they? It's a way of getting their head to meetings. If you want real evidence of out-of-body experiences, by the way, get yourself along to a residential conference for senior academics and pop into the discotheque on the final night. And there you will see it, grown men and women riding uncontrollably off the beat. Waiting to end so they can go and write a paper about it. Our education system is predicated on the idea of academic ability. And there's a reason. The whole system was invented around the world. There were no public systems of education really before the 19th century. They all came into being to meet the needs of industrialism. So the hierarchy is rooted on two ideas. Number one, that the most useful subjects for work are at the top. So you were probably steered benignly away from things at school when you were a kid, things you liked, on the ground you would never get a job doing that. Is that right? Don't do music, you're not going to be a musician. Don't do art, you won't be an artist. Benign advice. Now, profoundly mistaken. The whole world is engulfed in a revolution. And the second is academic ability, which has really come to dominate our view of intelligence because the universities designed the system in their image. If you think of it, the whole system of public education around the world is a protracted process of university entrance. And the consequence is that many highly talented, brilliant, creative people think they're not, because the thing they were good at school wasn't valued or was actually stigmatized. And I think we can't afford to go on that way. In the next 30 years, according to UNESCO, more people worldwide will be graduating through education than since the beginning of history. More people. And it's the combination of all the things we've talked about, technology and its transformation effect on work, and demography and the huge explosion in population. Suddenly, degrees aren't worth anything. Isn't that true? When I was a student, if you had a degree, you had a job. If you didn't have a job, it's because you didn't want one. And I didn't want one, frankly. So, but now, kids with degrees are often heading home to carry on playing video games. Because you need an MA, where the previous job required a BA, and now you need a PhD for the other. It's a process of academic inflation, and it indicates the whole structure of education is shifting beneath our feet. We need to radically rethink our view of intelligence. We know three things about intelligence. One, it's diverse. We think about the world in all the ways that we experience it. We think visually, we think in sound, we think kinesthetically, we think in abstract terms, we think in movement. Secondly, intelligence is dynamic. If you look at the interactions of a human brain, as we heard yesterday from a number of presentations, intelligence is wonderfully interactive. The brain isn't divided into compartments. In fact, creativity, which I define as the process of having original ideas that have value, more often than not, comes about through the interaction of different disciplinary ways of seeing things. The brain is intense. By the way, there's a shaft of nerves that joins the two halves of the brain called the corpus callosum. It's thicker in women. Following on from Helen yesterday, I think this is probably why women are better at multitasking. Because you are. Aren't you? There's a raft of research, but I know from my personal life. If my wife is cooking a meal at home, which is not often, thankfully, but you know, she's good at something. But if she's cooking, you know, she is dealing with people on the phone, she's talking to the kids, she's painting the ceiling, you know, she's doing open heart surgery over here. If I'm cooking, the door is shut, the kids are out, the phone's on the hook. If she comes in, I get annoyed. I say, Terry, please, I'm trying to fry an egg in here. You know, it is. Give me a break. Actually, there was a, do you know that old philosophical thing? If a tree falls in a forest and nobody hears it, did it happen? Remember that old chestnut? I saw a great T-shirt, really, recently, which said, if a man speaks his mind in a forest and no woman hears him, is he still wrong? And the third thing about intelligence is, it's distinct. I'm doing a new book at the moment called Epiphany, which is based on a series of interviews with people about how they discover their talent. I'm fascinated by how people got to be there. It's really prompted by a conversation I had with a wonderful woman who most people have never heard of. She's called Gillian Lynn. Have you heard of her? Some have. She's a choreographer and everybody knows her work. She did Cats and Phantom of the Opera. She's wonderful. I used to be on the board of the Royal Ballet in England, as you can see. Anyway, Gillian and I had lunch one day. I said, how'd you ever be a dancer? And she said it was interesting. When she was at school, she was really hopeless. And the school in the 30s wrote to her parents and said, we think Gillian has a learning disorder. You couldn't concentrate, she was fidgeting. I think now they'd say she had ADHD. Wouldn't you? But this was the 1930s, and ADHD hadn't been invented, you know, at this point, so it wasn't an available condition, you know, people weren't aware they could have that. Anyway, she went to see this specialist. So this oak panel room, and she was there with her mother, and she was led and sat on this chair at the end, and she sat on her hands for 20 minutes while this man talked to her mother about all the problems Gillian was having at school. And at the end of it, because she was disturbing people, her homework was always late and so on, little kid of eight, in the end, the doctor went and sat next to Gillian and said, Gillian, I've listened to all these things that your mother's told me. I need to speak to her privately. So she said, he said, wait here, we'll be back, we won't be very long, and they went and left her. But as they went out the room, he turned on the radio that was sitting on his desk. And when they got out the room, he said to her mother, just stand and watch her. And the minute they left the room, she said she was on her feet, moving to the music. And they watched for a few minutes, and he turned to her mother, and he said, you know, Mrs. Lynn, Gillian isn't sick, she's a dancer. Take her to a dance school. I said, what happened? Said she did. I can't tell you how wonderful it was. We walked in this room and it was full of people like me. People who couldn't sit still. They had to move to think. They did ballet, they did tap, they did jazz, they did modern, they did contemporary. She was eventually auditioned for the Royal Ballet School. She became a soloist, she had a wonderful career at the Royal Ballet. She eventually graduated from the Royal Ballet School, found her own company, the Gillian Dance Company. Met Andrew Lloyd Webber. She's been responsible for some of the most successful musical theatre productions in history. She's given pleasure to millions, and she's a multi-millionaire. Somebody else might have put her on medication and told her to calm down. Now, I think... what I think it comes to is this. Al Gore spoke the other night about ecology and the revolution that was triggered by Rachel Carson. I believe our only hope for the future is to adopt a new conception of human ecology, one in which we start to reconstitute our conception of the richness of human capacity. Our education system has mined our minds in the way that we strip mine the earth for a particular commodity, and for the future it won't serve us. We have to rethink the fundamental principles on which we're educating our children. There was a wonderful quote by Jonas Salk who said, if you were to, if all the insects were to disappear from the earth, within 50 years, all life on earth would end. If all human beings disappeared from the earth, within 50 years, all forms of life would end. And he's right. What TED celebrates is the gift of the human imagination. We have to be careful now that we use this gift wisely and that we avert some of the scenarios that we've talked about, and the only way we'll do it is by seeing our creative capacities for the richness they are and seeing our children for the hope that they are. And our task is to educate their whole being so they can face this future. By the way, we may not see this future, but they will. And our job is to help them make something of it. Thank you very much.
这段如果大家有兴趣啊，这个是在网络上 YouTube 上面就有 它的标题是教育扼杀创意，教育扼杀创意。好，那我们刚才看了这个教授他对教育的一个理念哈。那当然我们其实在这个就是我们都希望自己的教育下一代的时候，我们是用一个很完整而且真正启发他的教育。但是现实的社会上，的确我们在面对自己的孩子，面对自己的下一代的时候，我们还是有很多现实的考量。那这个问题呢，其实它跟我们今天讲到的这个本觉，它是一样的意思哈。我们每一个人都有本具的觉性，我们都有无限的潜能来开发，可以开发啊，这具足无漏性功德。可是为什么没有被开发啊？为什么我们没有去珍惜自己的本具的这个良能啊？其实是因为我们在面对这个社会的时候哈，我们记得学佛的人永远比没有学佛的人还要少很多啊，所以当我们今天已经认清楚我们自己的本觉，我们认清楚我们的觉性的时候，我们要去面对一个在这个社会体制下，大家都已经长期的跟着自己的习气在熏习，用自己的我执我见在彼此之间来看待的时候，我们势必会遇到了很多的冲突，啊，很多的冲突。所以呢，我们现在看到这个。哦，就是看到这一段啊，这个教授他对于他的教育的一个理念，那我们也是每一个人对自己的这个啊平常的生活乃至于修行应该要何去何从啊，或者是我们应该要往哪个方向啊去努力，其实每一个人都有他自己的一个蓝图啊，只是要认清楚的是，我们现在所处的这个社会它叫做娑婆世界啊，所以呢啊。一个人开始做就会有第二个人，第二个人开始做就会有第十个人，十个人开始做就会有一百个人，但是一个人不做就会有第二个人放弃，第二个人放弃就有十个人放弃，十个人放弃就有一百个放弃。所以呢，以前有一个现在在美国读博士班的一个年轻的女孩子啊，她25岁，她就跟师父讲啊，她说他其实从以前十几岁，他看到这个非洲的难民在电视上看到这种，他都会掉眼泪，他都觉得好可怜哦。可是他后来决定关上电视不要看，为什么？因为他说我一个人的力量能够救几个，是不是？那与其我不能救全部，不如我就都不要看好了，好，所以呢，其实他是因为自己觉得自己的能力很有限，所以他决定完全通通都放弃。好，那我们自己也是这样子哈，我们一个人放弃就十个人放弃，十个人放弃，每一个人都想啊，反正给更有能力的人去做，好，那这样子就够了，我不用参与，我不用来努力啊，这样子就大家的心态到最后全部通通都放弃。所以当我们今天学到了大乘起信论的本觉。佛陀他从以前到现在，他就是告诉我们，人人都有觉性，人人皆能成佛。好，所以我们看到这个之后，应该是要起一个舍我其谁的观念，要有一个舍我其谁，我不修，谁会来修？好，如果我开始修，即使他是失败的，即使他短时间内不能成功，即使他未来遥遥无期，但是只要有开始，好，我们想想看，这个台湾一个小小的岛。啊，知不到世界各地，大家都说哇，这个台湾哦，去西方国家，他们说台湾有瓷器很了不起。他们不认识佛法，但是他们知道有瓷器。啊，他们我们现在不认识啊这个基督教、天主教，但是我们知道有红十字会，是我们知道有无国界的这个医疗的组织，我们有知道很多的人道的这种救援。好，那我们在台湾。我们这小小的岛，却能够凝聚这么多人的一个，算是一个行善，乃至于慈善，吼、哦，佛教比较兴盛的岛屿。好，那为什么会这样？因为，每一个人都有这种菩萨的精神，有这种菩萨的心肠。好，所以我们开始去修。我们想想看，如果以看到这个慈济这个团体来看哦，其实当初也是一个小小的念头。从一个竹筒的观念，啊，每天啊，这个去买菜的时候节省几分， 节省几毛，这样子开始累积到现在的力量。好，同样的，我们在这个本觉里面，我们可以看到我们的觉性现在很微薄，可是如果我们要开始去开发我们的心，怎么去开发？第一个叫做自觉，第二个叫做觉他。我们如果没有觉他，其实我们的心还是具足无漏功德，无漏性功德。所以呢，我们以前看过这个梦骑士的这个广告，对不对？年纪大了又怎么样？是不是年纪大的人还是有正念觉性？年纪小又如何？年纪小也有年纪小的啊的什么，也有它的功能，也有它的一个能够呼吁我们以后下一次好给大家看，有一部片子叫做《让爱传出去》，让爱传出去啊 ，Pay it forward。他就是一个小男孩，他看到这个世界哦，大家都失去笑容，所以他发起一个运动，就是我们开始一个影响三个，三个影响九个，九个影响多少？九九八十一。好，所以呢，这好像直销一样哦，我们一个拉一个，一个拉一个。行善也是这样，我们的一个笑容，我们的布施，我们的善行，其实它就是在实践我们自利利他这个觉性，会因为我们的这个愿行，这些方便越做，它就会越清楚，越做就会越广大，越做就越有力量。好，所以本觉，我们今天知道哈，虽然它就有自净相，对自利来讲，我们会越修越有智慧；对利他来讲，我们会越来越不可思议。可是我们如果不用，它就放在那边神仙。我们还是一天过一天，每天就是你不是熏修我们的习气、烦恼、执着，越来越多的放不下，要不然就是另外一条路，开始熏修我们的觉性。好，所以呢，在这边讲到，这里有讲到熏习两个字，我们在后面讲到不觉的时候，也会看到熏习两个字。好，染跟净它是互熏的。好，所以我们可以看到，先看一下大纲啊。我们第六页开始讲不觉，好，这第六页的不觉有根本不觉，有知末不觉，表示我们有根本根深蒂固的无明，好，那还有呢，平常啊没有发现的种种的无明烦恼。好，那我们翻到七八两页，这里开始呢在讲我们这个无明呢，它是怎么出来的啊？怎么出来的？所以我们这一次回去啊，这个礼拜我们要看三页，就是六七八。我们看到七这个号码的右边有一个框框，有没有？身体次第从细到粗。他说我们不觉我们的烦恼它怎么出来的？它从细慢慢慢慢累积，这个叫练习来的，也叫做寻习。好，由细到粗。那现在要修呢，我们的智慧始觉开始觉，我们会觉什么？要开始断粗到细，最粗的开始先断。所以呢，第八页的上面这个框框写至断次第怎样，从粗到细。好，所以三个路就是粗的意思啊，就是粗的骨字。所以我们就可以看到，从第六页他先告诉我们不觉它有粗有细。好，那第七页讲不觉它是怎么开始不觉，它怎么转的。好，到第八页呢，那如果我们不要不觉，我们要有觉始觉，那怎么断？从哪里开始断？好，一个节一个节一个节的断，好，先把最粗的断，好，慢慢慢慢断细的，好，所以呢这是第八页。好，那再来我们看到第九页，第九页呢在总结，把总结把我们的心念分成粗跟细。好，我们凡夫的心叫做粗中又粗，粗心大意啊，已经得罪人家了还不知道自己发生什么事，讲错什么话不知道，还说我又没有怎么样，然后人家就气得要死。好，那这个菩萨的心，佛的心是细中有粗有细，好，细中是细。好，但是这个细并不是钻牛角尖。好，所以呢这里就总结了一下呢，那我们在断的时候应该要怎么样来断，要用怎么样因缘。好，那么我们现在看到第十页，第十页我们会看到哈，这个第十页的这个哈，它的一个大纲，它叫做染净怎样互熏。好，在这边呢，它就整个觉跟不觉开始有一个动态。好，所以我们的心里面有觉，我们的心里面也有不觉。 不觉就是我们的无明习气烦恼，怎么来的？练习来的，叫做熏嘛。就像我们的这个如入这个鲍鱼之肆，久而不闻其臭，每天都在菜市场，身上都是荤腥味，我们也没有感觉。那如果我们每天呢都去孜然之肆，我们都是在卖花的，身上都是花的味道，我们也不觉得香。所以人久了就是会有一个习气，在我们的工作环境，在我们的生活的环境，在我们在这个环境中呢，我们是需要像孟母三迁这样选择一个好的环境帮自己熏陶。那熏久了，慢慢的，我们如果常常跟善友相亲近，跟净法相亲近，净法的力量就大，就会熏，把染的法呢可以把它熏回来。那如果我们每一次都是在练习我们的染污，练习我们的不觉，久了也会变成习惯。久了也不觉得习气有什么不好，烦恼有什么不好，已经习惯每天都是照三餐这样过日子。所以呢，这个叫染净互熏。所以从这边我们就可以看到呢，前面讲的觉跟不觉，它就是两个两大阵营。我们每一个人都有本具的觉性，但是我们也有本具的习气。那本具的觉性的力量比较强吗？还是本具的习气？如果就目前来讲，应该是哪边比较强？就是习气哈。所以但是为什么我们会知道习气比较强？表示我们的本具的觉性开始起作用，才会发现。大部分的人不知不觉，他根本不觉得，还会觉得我不是很有个性呢，是不是？我个性为什么要改？我天生就是如此啊，父母亲就是这样生我的，我就是这样子的一个人啊，是只要我喜欢，什么不可以啊？所以一般人他是支持他的习气，支持他的个性，那甚至于还以他的个性、以他的习气沾沾自喜。那现在学佛之后，知道这个叫做习气，这个叫做生死，所以要去把它熏陶回来。但是熏陶，这个我们今天讲到的这个本觉呢，就可以看到这个熏陶是会产生功德的。所以我们回去看第五页，它这个能够拉回来熏陶，一定是要有这个功德，而不是起烦恼。所以熏陶一定会有，就自己的修行来讲，会越来越清晰，越来越有智慧，这样才对哦。如果越修越执着，越修呢越憋手憋脚，越修呢心量越狭窄，越修呢越看这个不顺眼，越看那个不顺眼，我们就是用错了，我们又用习气在修。所以要用本觉来修行哦，所以依法力熏习，这样子会呈现一种智慧清净之相。好，那再来我们度众生，你就会拿越来越多的众生有办法，也不会说这个我放弃那个我不行那个我投降就不会有这么多的障碍。就是这一类的人能够相处，那一类的人能够相处，所以我们能够看自己修行修到什么程度，不是只是看自己静静的时候，要看我们动中磨练的时候，我们跟别人日常生活在相处的时候，这种互动的时候，就可以看出我们修行到哪里去了，这样子。所以呢要检查很简单就是要动中磨练，那静中做养成的功夫。那这样子我们今天读到这个随然本觉我们就可以知道诸佛菩萨就是这样循循善诱，他想尽办法让我们能够启达自己本具的觉性。所以如果启发了这个自己本具的觉性我们自然而然就会升起一种想修行的心。好，所以呢刚才讲到这个教育，为什么不要去扼杀一个人对自我的肯定？如果我是能够肯定自己的时候，我会发挥我的好，发挥我的专长，发挥我的潜能。但是如果我们是否定的时候，我们会用否定的方式去对待别人，也会否定的方式去对待这个世界。所以呢我们的教育其实常常我们都会习惯性的要否定，虽然这个孩子呢这个煮饭或者是他写功课或者是拿了一个分数，譬如说今天妈我考了88分，他说什么88分，为什么不是98分为什么是88分，我们就会去看他没有的那个部分，我们没有去看他努力的那个部分，进步的那个部分。同样的我们在修行也是，我们常常看到我们自己跟佛差距很大，我们没有看到我们自己跟没有修行之前已经也差距很大， 所以没有鼓励自己。那我们看别人的时候，我们也都是说，哎呀，这个人修行那么久还不是习气执着，好，那个人还不是一样脾气那么坏啊，那个人呢、啊，每次都在打瞌睡。我们可能每一次都是看别人这个哈，啊，所以呢，哎，到最后不但是否定别人，又也是否定自己啊。所以呢，在这边我们今天看到本觉，我们哎常常来回来看这一段哈、啊，这个自性相跟不思议业相哦，要记得常常提醒自己，这样子我们才不会被境界拉着跑。好，但是它不是一天两天，它是需要熏习的。好，所以表示它要每天每天练习，每天每天啊，就给自己制造一个好的机会。所以呢，所以如果我们有每个礼拜来上课之外，每天要记得哦，要做功课。做这个功课呢，其实不一定要是去念很大的经啊，你念一句佛号也可以，念观世音菩萨也可以，念任何你觉得当他这个名词，当他这个名字，或者是当他这个形象出现的时候，我们的心会有一种欢喜心，会有一种慈悲心，所以每天练习起慈悲心。好，所以在出门之前要先心里面要先做这个功课，要先发愿。那发了这个愿，我们去看到每一个人，我们就会启发我们自己心里面好的这个叫自性相跟不思议业相，它就会出来作用。好，所以要以愿导行。所以我们不知道要怎么做，好，佛菩萨他有一个方法叫我们发四弘誓愿，大家会背吗？叫做众生无边誓愿度，烦恼无尽誓愿断，法门无量誓愿学，佛道无上誓愿成。我们先发第一个愿，叫做众生无边誓愿度。当我们虔诚的发出众生无边誓愿度，所有来到我们面前的众生都是我们要度化的对象。我们对世间的人事物，那个折磨你的，他是要被你度化的，我们的心念就会开始改变，我们跟他的关系就会开始改变。所以我们当我们要众生无边誓愿度的时候呢，后面的烦恼也好，法门也好，佛道也好，自然而然通通都 OK。 好，所以像以愿力为做前导，这是我们每天要做的功课。那这样子我们才能够真正把自己本具的觉性真正让它发挥功能。要不然读这个大圣解就是啊，我知呀，知道归知道啊，十年之后合起来也不用十年，半年之后这个课结束合起来也是就是归佛陀的哈，还是佛陀自己的觉性，还是马明菩萨的觉性。那这个跟我们只是刹那之间相遇，等于只是点点滴滴就这样子，好像传过了无痕一样的哈。所以呢，要把它拿出来用，那我们就开始启用。因为他说，即使啊，我们是在起烦恼，甚至于是一直在无明的状态，他也不离开我们的觉性。好，所以呢，我们就要知道了之后，就开始依着这个本觉，依着我们的觉性来启用。好，那这样子我们就会越来越了解，越来越熟悉，越来越知道我们这个心啊，真的是非常的微妙，非常的好用。好，那我们今天呢就到这边，下礼拜请大家六七八一起看，然后我们会发现哈、哦，其实六七八哦，他都在讲一样的，啊、哦，讲一样的东西。我在讲不觉的一个状况。好，那我们最后要来回向。